It's on Andrew's key ring in his pocket.
Is there a spare?
I don't think so.
Are you sure?
It's a very old truck.
There has to be a spare.
I think it was lost.
She looked away and turned and walked back down the hallway. She staggered and put out a hand and steadied herself against the wall. Reacher put the door on the latch and stepped outside to wait for Alice, the neighbor. South Dakota farm country was big and empty. Houses were not adjacent, not even close together. Alice would drive. He could borrow her vehicle. He waited. The siren howled on. Alice came on foot. He saw her 100 yards away in the moonlight. She was a tall woman, disheveled after hasty dressing, hurrying, slipping and sliding on the ice, gloved hands out like a tightrope walker, wild hair spilling from under a knitted cap. She came right to left along the road, a pale face glancing anxiously at the Peterson house, arms and legs jerky and uncoordinated by treacherous conditions underfoot. Reacher moved away from the door, into the cold, down the path to the split in the Y, and on toward the street. He met her at the bottom of the driveway, asked, "Don't you have a car?" She said,
"It wouldn't start."
He glanced left toward the road to town. She glanced ahead at the house. She asked,
"How's Kim?"
"Bad."
"What happened?"
"Andrew was shot and killed. Some guy in a vacant lot."
"That's awful."
"You better go in. It's going to be a long night."
"It will be longer than a night."
"You okay with that?"
"I'll have to be."
"Call her dad. She said he sometimes comes to visit."
"I will."
"Good luck." She moved on up the driveway. He headed left down the street. "I know what to do," Janet Salter had said. A minute later, Reacher was 100 yards short of the corner that would put him on the main east-west county two-lane. To his right, the center of town. To his left, the boondocks. He wanted a cop to be living way out there. The maximum, 10 minutes. Someone he could trust. Not Kapler or Lowell or Montgomery. He wanted one of the majority. He wanted the guy at home, off duty, asleep, then waking up, getting dressed, stumbling out into the cold, firing up his cruiser, heading west. He wanted to flag the guy down and demand a ride. He got part of what he wanted. When he was still 70 yards short of the turn, he saw lights in the east, pulsing red and blue strobes a mile away, coming on fast. The reflectivity of the snow made it look like there was a whole lit-up acre on the move, like a UFO gliding into land, a huge, bright, dancing circle of horizontal light. He hustled hard to meet it. His feet slipped and skated, his arms thrashed and windmilled. His face was already frozen. It felt like it had been beaten with a bat and then anesthetized by a dentist. The cop car was doing 60 miles an hour on chains and winter tires. He was doing 3 miles an hour on legs that were stiff and slow and unresponsive. He was slipping and sliding like running in place, like a slapstick movie. The corner was still 50 yards away. He wasn't going to make it. He didn't need to make it. The cop saw him. The car slowed and turned into Peterson Street and came north toward him. Bright headlights, electric blue flashers, deep red flashers, painful white strobes popping right in his eyes. He came to a stop and planted his feet and stood still and raised his arms and waved. The universal distress semaphore. Big, overlapping half circles with each hand. The cop car slowed. At the last minute, he sidestepped, and the car slid to a stop alongside him. The driver's window came down. A woman at the wheel. Her face was pale and swollen with sleep. Her hair was a mess. Her eyes were red. He didn't know her. He said, "I have to get to the Salter house." His words were unclear. His lips were numb. The upper part of his face was a frozen slab. The lower half was just as bad. The hinge in his jaw was hardly working at all. The cop said, "What?" "I need a ride."
"Where?"
"Janet Salter's house." 5 miles away, the prison siren howled on. There was radio chatter in the car. A dispatcher's voice, low and fast, trying not to sound urgent. Probably the old guy already back at the police station desk. There was alcohol on the woman's breath. Maybe bourbon. A nightcap. Maybe two or three of them. She asked,
"Who the hell are you?"
Reacher said, "I've been working with Holland and Peterson."
"Peterson's dead."
"I know that."
"Are you the MP?"
"Yes, and I need a ride."
"I can't do it."
"So why did you turn in for me?"
"I didn't. I'm heading for my position."
"The prison isn't this way."
"We make a perimeter a mile out. I get the northeast corner. This is how I'm supposed to get to it."
"What happened?"
"The biker escaped. His cell is empty."
"No," Reacher said.
"What do you mean, no?"
"Not possible. It's a fake. It's a decoy."
"He's either in there or not, pal, and they say not."
"He's hiding out in there, in a broom closet or something. It's a fake."
"Bullshit."
"I've seen it before. Two problems with escaping. Getting out, and then beating the manhunt. The smart ones hide first, inside, until the manhunt dies. Then they go. But this guy isn't going anywhere. He's doing the first part only, as a decoy." The cop didn't answer. "Think about it. Escaping is harder than it looks. I promise you, he's still in there. Tomorrow he'll get hungry and come on out from wherever he holed up. Big smile on his face, because it will be too late by then."
"You're nuts."
"He's still in there, believe me. Take a chance. Be the one."
"You're crazy."
"Okay, suppose I am. Suppose the guy really is out. He was gone more than 5 hours ago. You know that. So what the hell is the point of a one-mile perimeter now?" The cop didn't answer. The siren howled on. 5 minutes, Reacher said. "Please, that's all I need from you." The cop didn't answer, just hit the button and the gas, and her window thumped back up and the car moved off. He leaned toward it, and it accelerated, and the rear three-quarter panel smacked him in the hip and spun him around and dumped him down hard on his back. He lay breathless in the frozen snow and watched the acre of lights move away into the distance. "I know what to do," Janet Salter had said. Reacher got up and struggled onward to the corner, and the siren died. It cut off mid-wail, and tiny, brittle echoes of its last howl came back off the ice, and then nighttime silence swarmed in. Not the dull, padded silence of fresh snowfall, but the weird, keening, crackling, scouring, rustling hiss of a deep, frozen world. The thump of his footsteps ran ahead of him through veins and sheets of ice. The wind was still out of the west, in his face, hurling tiny frozen needles at him. He looked back. He had made it through 150 yards. That was all. He had 2 miles ahead of him. There was nothing on the road. He was completely alone. He was very cold. He half-walked, half-ran in the wheel ruts, his heels sliding wildly after every step until they locked into the next broken fissure, where a tire chain had cracked the surface. He was breathing hard, freezing air, burning down his windpipe and searing his lungs. He was coughing and gasping. 2 miles to go. Maybe 30 whole minutes. Too long. Insane. He thought, surely one of them had the balls to stay with her. One of the 7. One of the women. Damn the rules. Damn the plan. Peterson was dead. Still warm. Enough justification right there. Surely one of them would gut it out and tell the feds to go to hell. At least one. Maybe more. Maybe 2 or 3. Maybe all of them. Or maybe none of them.